We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast, brought to you by Indeed and betonline.ag. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. And today we're going to continue our series of celebrating different players' contribution or different people within the organization. And to me, this is the most important person in the whole why things went the way that they did. He chose the Lakers in free agency 2 years ago. First season did not quite go the way that we had hoped. We talked about some of the snake bitten nature of that. But this season was everything we hoped it would be and more. And in large part, it's because of LeBron James and his not only his abilities on the court, but his abilities off of it. He had a great quote during the NBA Finals talking about, somebody asked, why does he and AD work so well together? And this is what he said. He said, "We're not jealous of each other. I think that that's the best thing. In professional sports, you have guys that join forces to become alpha males. That's what they call them. Two guys that have been dominant in a specific sport on their own respective teams. And they get together and they talk about how dominant they can be. And they talk about this is going to be this and that. I believe jealousy creeps in a lot. And that is absolutely contrary of what we are. We know who we are. We know what we're about. We want the best, seriously, every single day, both on and off the floor for one another." And so, Mike, this gets me to thinking, he's been in that role, we've talked about this, of being the best player on the team for 17 seasons now, and one of the best players in the league, if not the best, for at least 15, which is, if not longer than anybody else, it's right near the top. This is not the first like superstar that he's played with. You've been around him way more than either of us have been. What do you see from LeBron from that leadership standpoint? Like, what kind of guy is he in around his teammates? Just what do you see from your interactions with him?
Well, so for LeBron, and as you mentioned, him being the best player on his team, he's had so many different versions of what his teammates were like. So who is the second best player on those Cleveland teams early? I mean, Big Z, like Larry Hughes, you know, there wasn't necessarily an automatic, like Mo Williams, there wasn't necessarily an automatic number two, another all-star level player next to him. And then, of course, that all changes. And that's one of the biggest reasons it seems like he goes to Miami. And then that first year, while they end up losing in the finals, he did ultimately, I think, play very nicely with Dwayne Wade, even though on the court it wasn't always at its most, it wasn't the cleanest. They had to figure that stuff out, but the leadership stuff, it seemed to be fine. He was okay with Dwayne getting shine here and there. The third guy with Bosch, you know, that's always going to be a little bit more difficult, just like it was with Kevin Love, whereas Kyrie seemed to fit more into that mold once he got back to Cleveland. But so all he always found a way, though, to I think make that work. The situation in Los Angeles last year, we know, was quite different, with no second star, with all of the young guys and him trying to sort of raise the collective floor of the group, which he did by his mere presence. But with Anthony Davis, it did. I think this is the first time where he brought in another star, but he was age 35. AD was 27, so they had that healthy age gap. LeBron's established. He's got his rings. They have this prior relationship going back to the Olympics, so their games complement each other. AD isn't going to dominate the ball. You know, he's going to give peak effort defensively. So I think that was part of the draw from AD or for LeBron to AD before he even came to the team. And so it was almost always, Pete, set up that this was going to work really well. That was the biggest, I think, basis for how it then filtered down to the rest of the lineup. But LeBron this year, I don't care if you talk to AD or Vogel or Rondo or Caruso, they all said the same thing about LeBron's leadership this year, and that it was fantastic. And so to me, it's hard to gauge. I guess we could call McMenamin back to talk about the Cleveland days, but it's hard to gauge how he could have been any better from a leadership standpoint. And I mean that from in the locker room, from in the hotel, on the bus, on the plane. Like, it, there was not a moment this season where we had anything other than him being in a good place in that sense. And I do think winning helps, right? they were good from the start. They carried that through, and especially in a turbulent year. But yeah, it's a long-winded way of saying that it was fantastic this year. And it's hard to picture it being much better.
The thing that struck me, and I'm wondering, it would be good to get Pete's perspective here, but also yours too, Mike. The thing that struck me from a real outsider's perspective, right, from where I sit, I'm not even going to practices or shoot arounds to ask questions or be around them from that environment at all, is LeBron always seemed to strike the right sort of tone with this group. And finding the right balance between let's get after it, right? And we're going to compete and let's go at things hard and let's be very focus driven and goal driven while also finding that joy that he had earlier in his career where he wanted to make it fun. He wanted to make sure that there was some levity. And Pete, you and I spoke about this on the pod a while back. Like, it might have even been one of our preseason pods heading into this year. And we had talked about wanting LeBron to rediscover that joy that he had, right? Because that clearly was not there last year for a bunch of different reasons. I think it was probably there early during the year from them trying to establish a culture and mix in the young guys with those vets. And he gave that his best shot, but then the injury came and then all the young guys got hurt. And it was just a really, just like you said, just a snake bitten season. And that was coming off of several years in Cleveland where I felt like those expectations for him had ramped up so high that even after winning the championship, it was clear that by the end of that run, right, like Kyrie Irving got traded and the joy seemed gone for him. And then he goes to Los Angeles, right? So I want to kick it back to both of you about how important you think it was, and maybe I'm off base with this, that he really did walk that line to me between carrying a serious tone, but never so serious that the idea that this should be fun escaped them. And that was never out of reach for them. Am I off base with that?
I think this team was very much built around cooperation on a number of different levels. And I think with the fun comes from that, right? It comes from working with other people really hard toward a shared goal. There's something that comes from that. It's the whole band of brothers thing in the military, right? Where when you go through something together, and Lord knows Lakers went through a lot this year, it builds a type of camaraderie and that you can't have on its own. With he and AD, they're part of the same agency, so, and there's a relationship that goes back to the USA team in 2012, right? But the quote that I let off with from LeBron talking about his dynamic with AD really speaks to somebody who's been through it a couple of times before, yeah, and seeing the ways that it can go sideways with another superstar, right? And it's a delicate balance. We saw this with Shaq and Kobe for years. We look at it back all these years later and like, oh, they won three titles, they did a three-peat and all of that. That was a tough dynamic, and we kind of brush over that 20 years later in a lot of respects. But like you said, they're the two alphas that can very easily clash. And that spirit of cooperation, how do you build cooperation? It's one, rooting for each other, right? Genuinely caring for the other person's success. Mike's point about the age gap, I think, is really important in that they are not – like they are peers in some sense, but in others they are not. And LeBron is kind of a mentor in that respect. But that cooperation also comes from accountability and holding each other accountable. And one thing that stood out to me on the floor, Mike, was LeBron's defense this season. I feel like AD really catalyzed that. What did you see from him on the defensive end this year? In year number 17, he was one of the better wing defenders in the NBA, even in the regular season.
Yeah, he really was. And I think what that told us is that as much as this team, we saw them have fun, you know, as the season went on. And this is, of course, aside from all of the ridiculous stuff going on off the court in 2020. But we saw them having fun at practices, at shoot-arounds, at games. Like, this was a team that liked each other. But more than that, they were a serious team. These were guys that like LeBron needed to win this year, right? That was the fact that he was able to have fun while doing it was because they were having success. And I think that is what should be accepted and understood for any team sport and really individual one as well. But that did remind me of the Lakers that when they last won, when I started covering the Kobe and Powell and Lamar and Bynum Lakers, those were serious teams. They were. And I think, sure, they did find some times to have fun, maybe even a little bit less so than this year's group. And I think that's more due to the personalities on the team than anything else. But ultimately, this year was about winning. And that was what LeBron's message was. And Pete, that's what the defense told you. That even, okay, from day one, and I think Vogel gets some credit, AD gets some credit, but LeBron doesn't need that much help in terms of what his mindset is. He knows the game, he knows the score, and he knew that with this group, if he did commit in that sense, that the team was going to win. And they did. And that's how they won the title, right? That's what carried through the whole season.
Well, I think that there's off-court leadership and there's on-court leadership, right? And those two things go hand in hand, but they're sometimes separate as well, right? Because there are guys who are just lead-by-example guys who are not very vocal. And then there are guys who are maybe role-player types, like Derek Fisher was a great example of this, I think, where he was a very vocal locker room person and he played hard and played his best, but he was not at the talent level or caliber of player as a Kobe Bryant or a Shaq or even a Pau Gasol or a Lamar Odom or Andrew Bynum, right? He wasn't going to sniff an all-star game. But LeBron, I thought, did both of those things, both lead as a vocal leader and someone who brought presence and experience and a focus off the court, but also on the court. And that idea that Mike just spoke about, Pete, that from day one, his buying in defensively, that's when you know that none of the other guys are going to be able to slack off, right? Because if LeBron is going to take possessions off or quarters off or full games off defensively, that gives other players the right to do the same thing. And then, even if LeBron barks at you, that has the potential to sow seeds of discontent, right? Because how come you get to do this? How come you get to take a possession off, but I don't? You're going to bark at me?
So the one thing I want to give LeBron credit in a sense, because I think that especially nationally, and Darius, what you just mentioned, it's all true, but the implication is that there were other seasons where LeBron didn't bring it defensively in the regular season. And of course, part of that is true in certain games, but the only reason for that was to maintain and to elongate his body so that when the playoffs came, he could ring that bell at the highest level. And when he would do that would be like in Cleveland, where he knew the offense was good enough that they were going to get to the finals. Like, he didn't need to play at that peak intensity level, nor should anybody when they're past year 10, let alone year 17. It's just not physically possible to go across 365 games. That's generally why MVPs are younger, because they just have that gas tank is able to carry them through. And most of those guys are not playing to the finals every year. So I've always thought that LeBron didn't get enough credit for the simple fact that he was planning out and plotting the whole season, Pete. And he had this season, the fact that he was able to sustain a 365 plus day season. And sure, you take out the 4 months, but like, he didn't really take off days on his body. That to me is part of the most remarkable thing about that. And we haven't even talked about his, you know, the ridiculous way he can run an offense and like all of that stuff. But just the mental desire and his ability to put that through a whole season plus at this age is really remarkable to me.
One thing I've really grown to appreciate about LeBron from watching him on a day-to-day basis, and I want to hear from your guys' perspective too, the difference between watching him every day versus watching him from afar, as from afar as you can watch one of the most ubiquitous, you know, players of all time, is the level of preparation, like the mileage that he has on his body at this point. He's played more minutes, you know, combined and, you know, regular season and playoff minutes than almost anybody in the history of the NBA, and he's still an MVP caliber player. And that point about one of the underrated aspects about his run this season is that point you're making, Mike, about like he's ramping his body up to be able to perform at a certain time of year. And that certain time of year is the same time of year every other season. But this year, it was significantly different. Darius, I'm curious, both from that preparation standpoint, but also the leadership again, what were the challenges that LeBron faces, kind of like the face of the team, to get this team to the point where it was, where we saw other top seeds? You know, like, part of me wonders with the Clippers and the Bucks and all of that, is if we're playing games at Staples Center, in Milwaukee, if it's a regular postseason, not in this bubble environment, does it turn out differently? Maybe, maybe not. But we know that the Lakers were able to navigate that in large part, I believe, because of LeBron's leadership.
I think mostly because of LeBron's leadership, honestly. I think that if you were drawing a bar graph, his graph is probably off of the page, right, in terms of his impact in this specific area. And this is throughout the entire season. And I think that it started very early in the year with the trip to China and the leadership that he took on, not only for his team, but I think for all of the players that were there, which is then sort of impacting the league itself, right? And the perspective that he brought to those behind-the-scenes meetings that the players had with Adam Silver and with the coaching representatives and trying to build out a strategy that was going to shield the players in a way from not having to be out in front of what was happening with the controversy that came about from Daryl Morey's tweet. So those seeds then, I think, were planted very early with LeBron being very front and center for this team in a way that was going to be meaningful, and where I think it really put him in a position where the other players knew that he had everyone's best interests at heart, right? And that he was going to try to protect them when needed and guide them through difficult situations. And I think that that showed itself over and over and over again this season. And some of that, I think, is maturity. I think some of that is LeBron not only understanding his position within the league and within the organization and understanding the organization's position as one of the marquee, if not the marquee, franchises that represents the league. So he not only understands that stuff, but he embraced it, right? And that idea then that he's going to place himself in the middle of all of that and be the compass in a way, I think that that was so important for this team from the very beginning.
I'm going to be careful the way that I tell this story, but I was talking to somebody who works for another team. And so this is all secondhand, but there, what they told me was that the coach of that team was, you know, during the playoffs, right there, the team is watching the game in the war room, one of the Laker games, right? This team is out of playoff contention, and was like, you know what, Rondo's the leader of that team. Look at LeBron barking at, you know, player X, and I almost lost it on him on the phone, and I'm just like, like, look, A, that's just insane. Anybody that was even remotely near this team will tell you that LeBron was terrific. Palinka, Vogel, the AD, the worst player on the team, anybody, the scout, like it's just so that from its own right was insane. Secondly, he's showing leadership by barking at somebody because he is more prepared than anybody else about
That's the accountability, right? He depended on AD to hold him accountable too. That's a good thing in sports to have that.
And so like that, and so for it to come like from somebody else that's actually not just a fan, but like somebody that should be knowledgeable about these types of things was just, and I'm like, really? And it's kind of like the Skip Bayless thing. Like we're in year 17 of this, right? And we're still questioning LeBron's leadership. Like just look at the production, look at where, and I would say the same thing when anybody would come at Kobe. What are you talking? Like, look at what this guy does. Look at what he's.
It's agendas, man.
Look at what he's desperately doing. So that's all. But that was just something that bugged me that I assume would bug you guys and bug anybody else who really knows what they're talking about. Now the thing that also occurred to me. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch The Shop, but mm-hmm. President Barack Obama was on it, and it just struck me. Like sitting there, here's LeBron, it's just him and Maverick Carter, his childhood friend, who they built this media and now voting and like everything else empire. And President Obama is like thrilled to be sitting there talking to him. And that's who LeBron could call when he didn't really know what else to do. When with Jacob Blake in the horrific shooting in Wisconsin in like the middle of the pandemic. And it just that mere fact of what he's able, like that also is a form of leadership and a form of kind of character. Like when you can call on somebody that has more respect than most people in the country, and not to make this a political thing at all, but just I'm just like check the stats, check the percentage of people that
who can call Barack Obama at midnight, right?
Yeah,
like, how many people can do that?
And it just was like even that, and then for to have him then come on the show, like just it's just a that is I know this is sounding very rosy, but it should be like that's the point. You don't have to apologize for what the facts are in a situation like this, and that just that really that I was just sitting there like. Man, this is what he brought with him to the Lakers, and a lot of people get credit for what they did this year. But as you said, Pete, moments ago, nobody gets more credit than LeBron James. It's just period.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about his on-court game a lot more. Right, where again, the difference between watching a guy when he comes on national TV and when he's in the playoffs versus watching him on a day-to-day basis with my nose fully, you know, dived into the tape and with all of the up-close interactions that you guys have. I can't wait to hear kind of what you've learned about LeBron over this last year that maybe you didn't maybe you knew, but it gives different dimensions that aren't possible from a distance. So let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll talk about his on-court game. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/podcast. This is their best offer available anywhere. So right now, go to Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply, and the offer is valid through September 30th. The wait is finally over, and football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So, as a Laker fan and as a Kobe fan, LeBron has always been kind of a natural foil for the vast majority of his career, right? He was the guy that was coming for Kobe's crown, and myself and many other Laker fans were naturally predisposed to be like, yeah, screw that guy, right? And so him coming to the Lakers for a lot of Laker fans has been a like, all right, you know, like I'm rooting for him, but let's see what you got. Let's see what it is on a day-to-day basis. And he's everything and more of what I'd hoped he would be. And that has been borne out with the result of how this season went. One of the reasons I always liked Kobe, and one of the reasons I have an affinity for AD, are those triple threat skills. That jab step, rip through, step back. I got a video coming out on, as this gets published, it'll come out tomorrow on AD's step backs. And I'll have a longer one explaining them. But it's that triple threat mid-post type of game. And that's not really LeBron's type of game. But the thing I've really come to appreciate in the technical aspects of his game is the technique within power. He is a power player. And Darius, you remember when Shaq used to like seal a guy on his hip, or the ways he'd use his forearm, or just like, yeah. Shaq knew how to be big in ways that not every big guy knows how to be big. The same can be said of LeBron, although he adds the dimension of being a ball handler, there are so many times where he'll make contact with a defender when the defender is on one foot or a little bit off balance. And so a completely legal play, he will make contact at 260 pounds and fast, and will completely just knock that defender off of his spot. That's the thing I've really come to appreciate with LeBron is, oh, he really understands how to leverage his power to create advantage. For you, Darius, from watching him on a day-to-day basis, what stands out to you on the court that maybe you didn't quite have the same appreciation for before he became a Laker?
So let me just say,
oh, Pete, yeah, I knew this was coming. I knew so that wouldn't go unanswered.
You called me out the last pod with the KCP stuff, right? No, the whole idea that if you were a Lakers fan and a Kobe fan, and now you get LeBron James on your team, and you harbor some misgivings based off of fandom for what this guy, for your own personal fandom.
No, it's not that. It's just like,
and try to leverage that.
It's weird to root to see LeBron. If Larry Bird became a Laker, man, I would have been like,
no, that's not the same. That's not the same.
It's not the same. It's not the same. But LeBron was one of the foils. It's like, or if Jordan became a Laker, right?
Please, sure. Like, bring him in. Oh,
hey, bro. I want a LeBron. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that from a Laker fan perspective, I'm not saying it's rational. It was just like, that was a dude we were arguing against on late on message boards 10 years ago, right?
I appreciate that last part. You were arguing against LeBron James in defense of Kobe?
Hell yeah, I was.
Oh, no, no. See, so this is where, sorry, and this is just some wild ass tangent that we're on now. I have always been, as a fan, there is a certain sports hate that exists to me, and it mostly exists.
I never sports hated LeBron. It's not the same. Definitely not the Celtics. Yeah.
A couple of pods ago, right? To me, there's always this idea of appreciating greatness. And there is a certain level that once you get beyond that level, there is only respect for me. There's only respect, right? And that's a very high bar. And the threshold to clear is incredibly high. So I'm not going to act like every great all-NBA level player gets to that point. But LeBron James was at that point. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan was at that point.
Yeah.
Like Larry Bird was at that point, right? Kevin McHale was not at that point, right?
Yeah.
But Larry Bird was. And you could go on, you can go over the last 40 years, right? Like my entire lifetime, there's maybe, you can count the number of guys that were like that on a single hand, right? But LeBron was one of those guys. And so in terms of appreciation, there's not much that I see now that I have this great new appreciation for. But what I will say is that seeing him do it night after night after night at a certain level, that's the thing that you appreciate. And it's the same appreciation I had for a guy like Kobe and for a guy like Magic Johnson, right? Is when you see a player perform at that level and leverage all of the things that he's able to leverage and call on all these different facets of his game, which makes him so great. That's what I was like, oh my God, this dude is amazing.
I always respected LeBron. The particular point I'm trying to make is that Kobe was a masterful technician.
Yeah.
Right? He was that jab step, had every bit of footwork down, had every shot. And that's not really LeBron's type of game. And so there is some degree from a basketball perspective of, he's big. It's his athletic gifts, right? Sure. And we're seeing him up close. I've been able to see like, oh.
There's a nuance like, now that you appreciate.
There's a nuance that I appreciate for sure.
I'm with you 100% there. And there are all of these little things that he does. Even now that he maybe doesn't have the same first step as he did like a decade ago, right? Like there was an old playoff game that was on NBA TV the other day. And it was that game where LeBron finally got over the Pistons and he scored like 17 or 23, some crazy number of points consecutive, right?
Yeah.
And he had these crazy drives and he dunked on Sheed and then he drove right by Tayshaun Prince and did a scoop layup. And it was just like, this dude physically is at a whole nother level. And I think when you watch him every sixth game or seventh game instead of every game, then those takeaways are more general. They are more, oh, look at him just drive by this guy or look at him just jump over a dude. And what you don't appreciate is how he does have a little bit of a hesitation with his dribble, how he does sort of feint the jumper to make you get up on your heels a little bit and then explode. And then he puts you in the sidecar, right? And knocks you off balance a little bit. All of the body control stuff that he does in terms of finishing, where it's not just strength, it's his ability to not only take the hit, but maintain a shooting position in order to get some of these shots off. And game after game after game, he's showing you just a little bit more of what's possible to do with a player that is that big and that fast and that strong and that skilled. And the whole package operating at peak function, which we saw during the playoffs, is just an otherworldly player. But the thing that I think I appreciated most was just how proficient he could be when he clearly wasn't operating at that same level, right? Where at the end of the game, the box score is still, oh, look at LeBron. He's got 29, 8, and 10. And how that even happened.
It didn't even look like he played that well. Right.
He didn't look like he was going all that hard for about, you know, 40% of the game. And I'm wondering, Mike, if there were, because you've got even a different vantage point, right? You're the sideline reporter. You're someone who is up close and seeing these games a lot of times from a way different position than any TV angle or even fans that are up in the stands. Are there nuances that you've seen from watching him where you're just like, oh my goodness, like I've never seen really anyone operate quite like this?
Yeah, it's the physical dominance paired with the mental dominance. But I want to go down your guys's history rabbit hole first before I get back to that.
Uh-oh.
Pete, so at the beginning of the podcast, you said LeBron's been the best player in the league for 15 years. Now, I wasn't sure.
I said he's been in the conversation.
Okay, did I hear that wrong? Darius, are you agreeing with Pete? People can rewind. The reason I mentioned that specifically is tied back into the Kobe LeBron thing. My perspective, of course, is much different because as I came out here, sort of hired as a reporter, and I've talked about that in this podcast, so I've tried to keep it to like, I just have to be as impartial and fair to the basketball as possible, which has made it which can be tricky when you're in Staples Center and you're interviewing Kobe after the games. But so what my perspective though was the one that at that time Kobe was the best player in the league. LeBron was coming, but what he had not done yet, and there's some similarities to where Giannis is now, he had not yet in the late playoff series games, barring a couple exceptions, he hadn't sort of made those type of shots that we are raised on watching Jordan hit and then watching Kobe hit. And those were sort of the two guys with Shaq and Tim Duncan, KG for a year mixed in as the guys with the crown. They had done that. They had done it in the postseason. They had won. So there was still it was an easy argument to make. Still at that point, despite the overwhelming statistical evidence that was coming in on LeBron, and that evolved, of course, as he actually won, and then that whole argument went away. And I think that most of us, you two included, you kind of acknowledged then, okay, yeah, now he is officially taken over. But it did take a while, and that's a separate argument, of course, from what your Laker fan impulses are to not wanting him to be better than your guy, which I get. Like, that's a total fan thing. Go ahead, Darius.
I tell the story, and I think I've told it on the pod before, but there are two moments I think that highlight that exact evolution that you talk about, Mike. And they actually don't have to do with the NBA at all. They have to do with the Olympics. And in 2008, Kobe had just won the MVP. They had just lost in the finals to the Celtics. And now they're in Beijing, and they're competing together on the same team for the gold medal. And throughout that Olympic run, you could tell that Kobe was the one who sort of took the lead as being the top guy. And you saw it in the gold medal game where pretty much every great player that was on that team turned to him. And it wasn't just that they turned and literally like said, like, do this for us. It was Kobe taking that position and saying, I got this, right? Yep. And everyone else falling in line behind him to accomplish that goal. Fast forward 4 years later to London, and I will never forget this possession. And I think this was in the gold medal game as well. I can't remember the exact way the play unfolded, but the game was fairly close, and a shot goes up, and the ball might have even got tipped around a little bit, and Team USA is on an offense. They shoot the ball misses, the ball is scrambling around some, but Kobe ends up with the loose ball. And instead of him reorganizing everything, he turned, he passed the ball to LeBron, and he went, and Kobe went and reset, and he stood on a different part of the court, sort of like, you get us organized. And I thought that symbolically to me, that was like, oh, Kobe's given the ball to this dude now, right? And it was, to me, even if it had happened before this, it was a symbolic passing of the torch a little bit, just in that single moment where I thought, ah, yes, like there isn't any more of a debate around this. LeBron is at the top of the league now, and even a player like Kobe, within the context of just this single possession, I thought that he recognized it there.
Well, that's the thing is about the, you've got to earn the crown, right? When you're talking about the best player in the game conversation, I personally don't believe that LeBron passed Kobe until around 2012 or so in terms of the current rankings.
Yeah.
But he was entering conversations as early as 2007 or so, LeBron was. And the Giannis comparison is similar in that I think that there are certain things that happen at the highest levels of basketball in those conference finals, in the finals, that you have to be able to execute, that I think, like the 2011 finals, even LeBron speaks to what a learning experience that was. But LeBron was in the conversation for the best players in the league as, you know, as early as that. Yeah. So LeBron had to go through that progression and go through even that failure in 2011, I think, to really see what he needed to add to his game. And since then, Mike, like when you think back on those teams back then and up to now with your up close vantage point of LeBron, like what do you see as this older player? I have some thoughts on the potential longevity of LeBron because of the nature of his game, but I'm curious what you see from that up close vantage point.
Yeah, so the physical and mental combo, and part of the physical, and this is not to answer the question directly, because going back to the Giannis point or the early LeBron point. It's not that we worship hero ball and buzzer beaters. It's that sometimes, and oftentimes, I should say, in these big games, you just have to hit shots, like tough contested shots. And that was the part where LeBron, early in his career, you could still double team him or force him to try to take a turnaround jumper or a three or whatever, and he was not as likely to hit it early in his career. It just like so his three-point percentage, rookie year, 33, second year, 28, third year, 25, fourth year, 33. Right, fifth year, 40. That was he started to get better, but he these are in the playoffs, by the way. Like it, regular season, the numbers are less stark, but like the here as I'm looking at him here, so 29, 35, 33, 31, 31, 34, 33, 33. Right, then he sort of hits a point in Miami, and all of a sudden you see that ticking up into the 40s or the high 30s, and like that's the part that Giannis still doesn't have. So like he can't have that torch. Until he really shows that he makes a big gain in that part. So that's part of what that was. In Kobe and Jordan, there was never any question there, right? They also brought it defensively. They could also get a guy shot. They could also dunk and attack the rim. But when it all broke down, they could get their shot off. Now, just more simply, watching LeBron up close and personal, basketball to me, and I think Frank Vogel would still agree, is still about scoring at the rim and defending the rim. And those are two things that LeBron still, if you give me anyone in the league and you give him the ball at the top of the key and you say, go to the hoop and finish or just make something happen, draw four defenders, kick out. He still does that better than everybody. And that to me is still, that's the most valuable possible thing when all else fails in basketball. If you've got somebody that's big enough that has the skill to score at the rim, that's the thing that tears teams apart, that tears defenses apart. And then on the other end, he has the size, the athleticism to still then impact things on that side of the floor at the rim.
Yeah.
That bakes into it, Pete, but that's still in person. Like the mental thing is one thing. You can almost get that vantage point, guys, sitting at home, because when you're watching the whole floor, but when you're up close, it's just that like his physicality at both sides of the court at the rim is always what stands out to me above everybody else.
Two of the biggest plays, I think, this season to me, during the regular season, at least, were that driving play he had on Giannis, right? Mid-post, left block.
Ripped right? through.
Ripped through, strong hand drive to the middle of the court, finish on the right side of the basket, layup. Against the Clippers, it was that isolation at the top of the floor against Marcus Morris, right? He gave a little hang dribble, explosion to the basket, layup and one. And Mike, that speaks exactly to your point that when it came to those big moments this season, and he did it during the playoffs time after time after time. I mentioned this on one of the podcasts, like during the playoffs, that it might have been during the Denver series. And I went on NBA.com and I watched every single made basket that LeBron had had during the playoffs to that point. And it felt like every single one of them was a freaking layup or dunk. Like there were obviously a lot of three-pointers mixed in, but his ability and will when it came down to it to get to the basket and create a good shot, a lot of times for himself, but also for teammates, right? But that ability to threaten the rim and get there time after time after time was just spectacular.
So in year 17, he's doing that. And that's where I started to really appreciate that technique within his power and why I'm really bullish about his longevity is there are two things that are not going to go away. He's going to be big and strong, and he's going to be able to handle the basketball. And that when he's 36, 37, 38, he's still going to be those things. I was really taken by how many in the playoffs when he really turned it up. And even over that weekend against Milwaukee and the Clippers, where he got like older brother type of buckets on some of the best defenders in the NBA, right? Where it's just like, I'm going to spin and I'm going to back you down and I've got the handles to be able to seal you on each side and I'm not going to give up my dribble. And all of a sudden I'm right underneath the basket and maybe you block it up high. That's something that happened a few times when he did that, but he's definitely collapsing your defense and he's able to score in that manner while also being able to score out of the post. So Mike, going forward, like, there's obviously a strength and conditioning component to this that I'm not as well versed in as I am other elements of basketball that, like, if he wasn't completely dedicated to this, his body would have broken down in ways that literally every other basketball player in history after this type of mileage, their bodies have. But he combines that with an understanding of how to use his power and his ball handling in a way where, like, what does the future hold, do you think, for LeBron? What are, as we look to hopefully repeat and hopefully beyond with this team, how will he be able to like maintain this level of play?
I think that his mastery of the game mentally is such now that he knows how to, it's weird to say that he knows how to pace himself physically because he didn't really pace himself that much this year. He's now become a ridiculous expert at recovery. And that's an element that, you know, maybe you could say you could bring Tom Brady into this and look what he's doing this year at his age. What is he, 43? In that sport. And like, that's, other than that, I mean, I don't know of another player that's been in Brady still, as good as he is, you know, he's not like the unquestioned best player in the game like LeBron. And maybe I shouldn't say unquestioned. To me, he is the unquestioned best player in the game still. And where does he go, like, just for next year? Because I do think it's tricky to start looking too far down the future. But just even for next year, you could just put him on the block X times a game and have a brilliant offense. And now what I don't know is,
guard skills really help that too, right? Like your other superstar can space the floor, can handle the ball and allow that to happen.
Yeah. But like, I guess the good news is you don't have to do that yet. And what I love about where this team can go next year, specifically around LeBron, is that they've learned how to play and they've got that defensive intensity. I think there's going to be a certain amount of that's locked in. There's a certain amount of confidence, I think, that goes through from winning the title. And like all of that stuff, I think, can allow LeBron to exist in that same sphere that he's in without having to without having to push himself to the point where he did sometimes early in the season. But I don't know. I'm almost confusing myself thinking about it, guys, because I don't see a physical drop off happening next year. And it seems insane to think that, but you know, he's going to be 36 like next year. That's not that old. Like he's going to continue to do this treatment. He's got the resources to do so. And it's just, there's no reason for me to expect a decline.
The thing that you said, Mike, that stands out to me was you used the term mental mastery. And he's still in that sweet spot to me where, and I think this specifically applies to basketball players even more than any other sport because of the, you play both ends, right? That you never leave the field basically during the course of game action. basketball players often talk about that there is this window of time when you are still able to perform at a high level physically, but you've gotten enough reps and experience now to see the game really moving in slow motion, right? And LeBron's such a basketball savant that's probably been true for him for a really long time, but he actually did need other parts of his skill game to catch up a little bit, especially the shooting aspect. You know, Mike talked about throwing him in the post, right? And you could do that. You could also literally stand him at the top of the key and you could run 50 pick and rolls with him a game. You could stand him at the top of the key and he could just handle the ball and orchestrate offense and direct people. You could put him at pinch post. You could put him at the elbow. You could run all of these different actions through him, like in a very similar way to like Nikola Jokic, for example, right? And you would get all the benefits of how smart he is and how much of a threat he is from different parts of the floor without necessarily taxing him as much physically, where he's really trying to drive a lot or penetrate the defense simply off of isolation basketball, or even take a pounding in the post, right? By going to that well over and over again. He is such a smart player that you can position him anywhere on the court and he's going to retain a certain amount of effectiveness just because of how he thinks and sees the game. And so when you talk about longevity, Pete, it's that idea of he can continue to just impact the game by the way that he sees things. It sort of reminds me of Magic Johnson when he had his comeback in 96, right, where he was 265, he's probably 30 or 40 pounds heavier than what he was during his prime.
He came back as a power forward when he was a point guard.
Yeah, but he was like a point power forward, right? He would still operate in the middle of the break. He would post up a lot more. He would pass out of the post. And there was just a lot of like, oh, this dude still sees the game at a genius level. And there's not a lot of guys in the league that see the game that way.
So he's always going to see the game at a genius level at this point. He's achieved that and achieved that long ago. But what makes him really exceptional is that he's physically been capable of doing it longer. Those elements of physical capability and wisdom and experience, those are like two elevators where the wisdom and experience starts on the first floor and then the physical abilities at the 10th floor. And the one's going down, the other's going up. And when they both meet around that fifth floor, that's when a player is in their prime, right? But LeBron has been in that window of kind of being a basketball avatar, master of all of the elements for so long mentally. And that happens for all of the, like Jason Kidd's still a brilliant player. Magic Johnson has a brilliant understanding of how to play basketball, but they cannot play basketball anymore, right? At least at the NBA level. And so what I would argue and what I've seen with him is that he, by being able to be the best player in the NBA and in that conversation for so long, he is pushing the game forward. I always think to Kobe's last tweet of keep pushing the game forward, in that the players that come after him will be studying LeBron's workout regimen, his recovery, his mastery of recovery that Mike was talking about, his in-game load management, knowing when to rest, and things that impact his body in that way. He's pushing, because he's been in that longer than anyone else, he's discovering things about basketball that nobody else has discovered because nobody else has been in that place. And that's part of that whole pushing the game forward element that I'm really so attracted to in LeBron's game. And it's been really wonderful to like fall in love with the basketball of him, right? After being that nerd on a message board saying like, oh, Kobe's my guy, and like giving begrudging record, like obviously LeBron was always great, right? It was never that, but it was that like, Kobe's my guy, right? And that lizard brain, and so much of it was predicated on, oh well, Kobe has mastered basketball, the jab steps and the rip throughs and the step backs and all of the pretty things, the footwork, all of that can work on. I have grown to appreciate how LeBron too has gotten everything that he can out of his talents. It's just he's in a bigger, faster, stronger body, right? And he's able to see more of the team game, right? Like, whereas Kobe's kind of the, again, going back to the Avatar references, Kobe's Fire Nation, right? Like, Kobe will drop 81 on you and it is capable of doing that. Whereas LeBron understands how all of the pieces fit together. Am I making sense, Mike?
Yeah, of course. And so LeBron right now is the all-time leading scorer in the postseason, which you know, you would surmise, given that he's also now played the most postseason games, right? Just passing Fish. And he's second in assists. Like, regular season, he's third in scoring, and I believe eighth in assists. I'd have to double-check that, but I think he's eighth, and I think, like, Chris Paul is just one spot ahead of him. But just that, the scoring and the passing, like, that alone that you still saw in the regular season this year, that you still saw in the postseason, and we're not talking about rebounding or reading the defense, just as a the two things you think the most about when you just like take your four-year-old or out for their first basketball practice, like that's the first thing you know everyone's thinking about, shooting and passing, and really shooting first, right, and then passing later, and then maybe you talk about rebounding a little. And it's just the staggering number of points and assists that he's done. And Darius talked about some of the places on the floor you could take advantage of doing that, but he still can now score at every level. He can pass from every level. And though that part of his, like, where he's gotten his skill set up to in confluence with what Kobe did and that constant pursuit of excellence on that end, that is remarkable too. Those are the things that have turned him from this crazy, incredible athlete, you know, coming out where with an NFL body, like coming out as an 18-year-old, and he kept the skill work up enough to be able to score that much and to be able to total that many assists.
Mike, he led the league in assists this year in his 17th season.
Yeah, 10.2 a game.
He basically played point guard, right? The Lakers didn't start another ball handling guard in their lineup, right?
So we had one other guy on the whole team that could
do it consistently, yeah. Right? And we talked about that last pod about how consistently should probably be put in air quotes based off of how it was during the regular season, right? And so LeBron really was the totem for this team, right? He was the guy, he was the one who brought it all together, right? And I bring it back full circle now because we've actually talked a lot about Kobe this pod, and I think that it's apropos because A, they were rivals during their playing career, and I think during this season, when Kobe was still with us, you started to see more of that connectivity between them when Kobe would come to games. And then Kobe Bryant tragically passes away, and that was just a terrible thing for the entire league, for the entire sport, and for, I think, athletes in across the world in multiple sports, right? But it was acute for the Lakers as a franchise and for a lot of the players on this team. And again, this is totally from an outsider's perspective. And so maybe, Mike, you could speak to this a little bit more, because maybe it felt different from being so close to the situation as you were. But I remember LeBron's speech that first game back, and you know, he had the paper, and it was all written down, and then he crumbled it up, and then he just sort of spoke from his heart. And I remember saying this, I said it on Twitter at the time, but that regardless of what LeBron accomplishes in his Lakers career, and this was back in, you know, early February or late January or whenever it was, when they played that first game, I said, I'll be thankful that he was here during this time, that he was the person who had the perspective, he had the leadership, he had the gravitas, he had the emotional even-keeledness. There were just so many leadership qualities that I thought he brought to the table that were significant and meaningful for this team, for this year, in all of the things that they faced, but especially through the Kobe Bryant tragedy. And just thinking about it now makes it all even, everything that they've done makes it more special, right? But it also just reminds me of how meaningful LeBron was as a man, not just as a player, but as a man for this organization. And Mike, if there's anything you wanted to add to this, please jump right in. But I just didn't want a whole pod to go by without us at least bringing it back to that, because it's been on my mind a lot in this last hour that we've been talking.
Yeah. So that really week leading into that was just so incredibly difficult and emotional. And then I think what I was kind of I was selfishly originally hoping that they would play the Clipper game just to kind of like have that Band-Aid of grief ripped off. But then in hindsight, I kind of got it. Like, it was just still, especially for the guys that had to play, it was so raw. And then, so a couple of days later, Portland comes to town, and we're all just getting to the arena that day, right? There's just, of course, it's just different. Everybody's kind of looking down, you know, not quite sure what to do. And how many people in the NBA world and just in general could sort of step into that situation that LeBron James did? And, you know, the answer is very, very few. And so my vantage point for that, most of the TV hits that I'll do for the Spectrum are right in front of the basket, in between the Lakers bench and the basket. And so that's where I'm standing, because this is all happening right before tip off. The whole ceremony goes through, and then, you know, during a couple of different times, but I'm looking over and many of the players are on the bench crying. I'm crying. Everybody's crying. You guys are crying watching at home. And LeBron just kind of puts his arm around Quinn Cook, who's crying almost more than anybody else. In part, I think, due to the fact that Quinn's dad, no longer with us, like, massive Kobe fan. And so, like, that type of thing had to fit in, right? Like, that's one thing that I think that is so special about the Lakers in this city. It's a generational thing. It's something that you share with your siblings, with your uncles, with your grandpa, with your dad, with your mom. And so they're comforting each other. And then out of that moment, LeBron still has to walk over to center court, and somehow with the eyes of the world on him, has to pull it together and has to say something. And that is kind of the peak, I think, of a leadership moment. But the reason that it doesn't surprise me is that there's not a single time that I've interviewed or anybody's interviewed LeBron this year where you ask him a single question and he doesn't have, like, he's got answers. It reminded me of Kobe in that same way. It reminded me of Phil Jackson. And like and it's intellect. It's intelligence. That's what that is. That's what that is.
Honestly, man, like, there's really no more to say about this guy. He was just the epitome of what you'd want from a face of a franchise player. And the Lakers as an organization, I think, have had several of those types of guys, right? Going all the way back to the 50s and 60s, right? Like, they've almost had a face of the league guy on their roster through every period imaginable, right? Going back to Mike and to West, to Kareem and Magic, to then Kobe Bryant and Shaq in his own way too, and then with Kobe again through the Powell era, and then now with LeBron. And that leadership that you talked about, and I think this is what made this season so special, because it wasn't just the leadership. It was also an incredible high-level performance season from a player operating at near or at the peak of his powers in the 17th year of his NBA basketball career. And to be gifted with that as fans, and to be able to watch him night after night after night carry that mantle in the way that he did, it was just special. And you know, we could probably go another 60 minutes talking about random LeBron things, but just a wonderful, wonderful player and season and an exceptional leadership job, just all of it tangled together, and he brought this team through to the end. And just like you said, man, forever appreciative, forever thankful that at this point in time, the Lakers had this guy.
Well, guess what? LeBron's going to come up in every one of the other players' podcasts that we do, right? Because he was so central to what they do, more so than we talked about anybody in this one. But I think that if we asked LeBron to summarize his season, he would say something like, I kept the main thing the main thing. That's the thing that he always says. He got it from Pat Riley. And that, I think, summarizes part of what you guys were just talking about, where that was the whole season from the jump, kept the title at top of mind. That was the approach in China through after Kobe passed. It even re-intensified to COVID, to Black Lives Matter and the social justice movement. All of that time, he kept in his mind when he got in his hyperbaric chamber, when he did his strength sessions, his core sessions with Mike Mancias, when he conducted social functions for the team, when he broke down film. It was always about winning the title. And he got finals MVP, as well he should have. The one thing that bugs me a little bit is that he wasn't the regular season MVP. I'll save that for maybe it's just me. I get he got finals MVP and the main thing, the main thing, all that. But still, that annoys me a little bit. But yeah, man, that he damn sure kept the main thing, the main thing, Pete.
And he's been able to keep the main thing, even in year 17, because he does the work, right? The physical, the conditioning, the circuits that he has to go through. He's a master of recovery, as you said. He has had to master all of these different elements of such a multifaceted game. And he's been able to do it for longer, really, than anybody else has. And really grateful for everything he's done for the organization. Can't wait to see what the future holds with him. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We will catch you next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5.
Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.